Hey, America.
Start listening now.
We have just had the chance to watch Eurovision Young Musicians 2024, and I don't know about you guys, but I am feeling classy.
I feel refined. I feel... What about you, Eric?
Yeah.
You got your tuxedo pressed and everything?
A tuxedo has formed around me. It's amazing.
And what about you, Derek?
And welcome to another flatulent episode of 12 Points from America. The Eurovision podcast from America, the country that kills 99.9% of bacteria. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny. I'm glad it's another flatulent episode of 12 Points from America. It's what we hope to bring to you. Yeah, it's what we hope to bring to you every single week.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You can't spell
classy without ass. So, I mean, what do you expect?
That's so right.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about
Eurovision.
That's the main stuff. We do talk about Eurovision. We will talk about the young artists. But we have a little bit of news, too. Before we get to that, Sam, hit it with the socials.
Yeah, you can find us on all the standard social media outlets. I'm sorry, I'm still lost it. I'm yeah, farts. You can find us on all the standard social media outlets, for better or for worse, at 12pointsUSA, or just email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. You can support us either by buying our fabulous merchandise over on our Redbubble page, or you can support us directly with either a one-off contribution on our Ko-fi account, that's ko-fi.com, or you can support us with a monthly donation on our Patreon. And whether you support us financially or not, we love you and see you and appreciate you either way, but Patreon supporters do get exclusive content and early access to episodes. Yeah.
Hey. Yeah, you can watch us react to Johnny Logan being weird. Which is great.
It is
worth the price of admission for sure. Also tattoo being weird and also us being weird. You get it all with the Patreon contribution. Patreon.com/12pointsfromamerica. We really do love the little community we've kind of built up there. And that's that. All right. Eurovision, young musicians, and also old musicians. One of the old musicians that has, big surprise, been in the news, is our old pal, Joost Klein, who is in less trouble than before, ?
Slightly good news.
Well, I suppose. But basically, the sort of the criminal investigations over whatever it was that happened right after semifinal 2 up in Malmö, you know, up there, that's been dismissed and let go. And the Dutch delegation and the folks at Avertros have just said, like, well, we need to have a discussion about this. Mm-hmm. with the EBU and how it was handled. And I feel like we still don't have really a complete picture of what happened. It is not necessarily our business to know.
I mean, we just don't know. Again, a charge being dismissed is indicative of, say, a lack of evidence. It's not necessarily a acquittal. We don't know what this means in terms of what the truth of the situation was. We just know what the Swedish authorities feel that they legally have a foot to stand on. So again, what the Swedish legal authorities, what they decided to do versus what the EBU decided to do, those are two separate things. They're kind of linked, but they're two separate processes. So we don't know exactly what happened. We don't know what the right answer is. Either way, people are pissed off.
The one thing I feel like I need to is to push back on that I hear on occasion is this notion that this is a complete vindication and or that Joost did nothing wrong. Because I don't think that's true. Basically, did he deserve to get the boot? I don't know. I don't know that we'll ever really have a super solid answer for that. But Malmö was a tense place. It was a stressful situation, and you could feel it in the press room. You could feel it just about everywhere. and backstage, like where this occurred, it had to have been even more so.
Right.
And it seems like it was a situation where things just boiled over. And again, that's not defending anyone's actions at all or anything like that. Just that, like, I can and certainly will criticize the EBU for a lot of things, but I feel like they did what they felt they had to do to protect their staff. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just unfortunate. This isn't how we wanted it to go.
Yeah, but exactly. It's sort of like any job. There's an HR process and then there's a legal process. You know, if somebody does something wrong, it's whether it goes against the standards and practices of an organization versus what is standards and practices of legal. And oftentimes those are correlated, but oftentimes they're different processes. And in this situation where you had to make a snap decision, like within 24, 48 hours of something happening in an event where the eyes of the world are watching, I don't know if I had been in that situation, what I would have done. I don't know the rules and regulations of what a person signs up to. Are we done talking about this yet? I'm really exhausted about talking.
That's fine. Yeah. Let's talk about something awesome.
Yes.
Oh, some better news. Yeah.
Great news. Amazing news. Montenegro's back, baby.
Yes.
Crna Gora. Yes. They are back after taking a couple years off. Last time we saw them was Vladana with Breathe. And I believe she is now coming back as potentially head of delegation or head of content. Like, she's involved with this brand spanking new national final that they are going to be doing in order to pick their entry for Swiss City to be determined. Mm-hmm. That, frankly, by the time you're listening to this episode, you may already know what that Swiss City is going to be. We know it's one of two, but hey, we know Montenegro's back, baby!
Oh, this is great. Have they done national finals before?
I feel like they have, but honestly, it's not a country with a huge population or as big of a music scene as some of their neighbors, like over in Serbia or Croatia, for example. I feel like they have. I know when they were a united Yugoslavia, I feel like Montenegro had its own setup as well, through, you know, Radio Tita Grad or whatever they were called at the time. But,
Radio Tita Grad. Love it.
Yeah. But yeah, I feel like generally they've done internal selection. But it's great to see them not only coming back to Eurovision, but doing something that's investing in the Montenegrin music scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Montenegro always feels like a musical tourism ad.
Oh,
with
yeah.
How they stage things and that sort of thing. Like, I never would have considered going to Montenegro, and then I saw like audio. It's like, oh man.
Yeah.
I'm missing out. Derek, did you You went to that general area a year or two ago. Did you go to Montenegro?
Yes.
All right.
You tell.
How was it?
We spent most of our time bussing through the mountains, like a national park area, which was really quite beautiful. So all the travelogue music videos that you see them do, it is actually very lovely.
Yeah.
It's like being in a postcard. We weren't there very long, but it was nice. Nothing crazy.
Okay. Gotcha.
Did you also feel the need to harmonize with your best friends on a mountaintop?
I mean, we tried, but I mean, we were just tone deaf.
By the way, I did a little bit of digging. It looks like they have used national finals before. There were national finals in 2007 and 2008, as well as Montevideo, which they did in 2018 and 2019. But generally speaking, they've been internal selections.
Gotcha. Well, I'm so glad they're back. I'm glad that they have someone in charge that understands that the air is what we breathe, which is huge. Like, we'll die without it.
We're still dragging them.
And also, this is the delegation that gave us the sage advice to always stay cool like a swimming pool, and to give us chance to refinance.
Yeah, it's important. It's important to be given a chance in this life to refinance.
Oh yeah.
I wonder what that guy's up to. Can we make him the head of delegation?
Head of delegation.
Rambo Amadeus, head of delegation. Dear mother of God.
Yeah. I'm going to find out what he's up.
Probably being a hilarious troll. Supposedly he had two voiceover works. He was in the Croatian and Serbian language version of the Angry Birds movie, and he was Crush in Serbia's version of Finding Dory.
What?
Jeez.
Nice. Also The Lion King, Despicable Me, Madagascar, Ice Age Continental Drift. All right, so yeah, it looks like I need to spend a little bit of time and look up the Serbian and the Serbocroat dubs of Madagascar 3, Europe's.
Yeah.
Oh, John, just going to say it. You don't. You don't. I don't think we do.
Man, this guy's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, are we ready to dive into our big topic for the week?
That depends. What is it?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm hoping it's Eurovision Young Musicians, or else I just wasted 2 hours listening to the soothing sounds.
Wasted? Oh, no.
It was actually quite lovely. I don't mean wasted.
Oh, yeah. All right. I need to get something out of the way right away.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I've talked before on this show about how when you're making a logo for something, you can't just have anything be a substitute for a letter.
Are you going to talk about how they put the cello there for the V, but the entire time you were just looking at it thinking, Eurovision.
That is precisely what I was about
to say. I would always look to it. I'll be like, I'm glad to be watching the young artist's version of Eurovision.
That is not a V. It does not look like a V. You can't do this.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad someone else did.
It didn't even try. It didn't even...
They could have done so many different instruments that are shaped like a V. A harp. Oh, obvious.
Yeah, Ireland's not participating. They're not going to get pissed off about it. Just like, I'm inordinately annoyed by this. You can't do that. Stop.
It was just that it was on the screen the entire time.
Yeah. Eurovision, yeah. Young Musicians, was a spectacular performances for everybody. it was really good. If you've never seen one of these, it's unless like if you hate classical music, this isn't going to change your mind probably, but like it's a fun watch. You know, it doesn't quite have the spectacle of like Eurovision, but this sort of music is just a whole other planet.
It should be noted though, like we say classical music, and you know, granted a lot of these songs were, you know, considered classical. You know, there were two songs by Camille Saint-Saëns, there was Mendelssohn, there was Ravel and Haydn and Rachmaninoff. But I mean, one of these songs, I think the Swiss euphonium player, the song that he was performing was only written in like 2017. Mm-hmm. So we say classical music, but really it's just, you know, fancy pants instrumental music. Fancy pants
instruments. Yes. Fancy pants.
And let's take this opportunity to point out that the euphonium as an instrument literally f***s.
It's
euphonium.
It's gorgeous. I have to say, can we just get right into the results? Because I actually was surprised that the euphonium did not podium. I thought it was extremely...
You just wanted to say euphonium?
Yeah.
We needed euphonium.
The euphonium. Oh, my God. Yeah.
There were a few I'm kind of shocked didn't do better. And there was one... there were a couple. Like, as soon as they went to the judges and they said, what do you think? And they started talking. I'm like, ooh, that's bad.
Yeah.
Which is harsh because I feel like every single one of them did exceptionally well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
This wasn't one of those, like Eurovision, there's always a few people who just kind of choke... Or it just doesn't come together. Like, no, they all sounded fantastic. Like, I, as a layman, I'm like, I'd be hard pressed to pick the best of the group.
Right. I mean, and just as a little bit of an overview, there were 11 participants in this year's event from Armenia, Austria, Belgium, Czechia, France, Germany, Norway, Poland, Serbia, Sweden, and Switzerland. Ages from 13 was the youngest to 20, playing a wide variety of instruments, cello, clarinet, the aforementioned euphonium, which is a debuting instrument for this year. Mm-hmm. The contest has been going on since 82, and it's the first euphonium we've had. Flute, oboe, five different artists were playing the piano, and one violin. And it was decided, the winner was decided by it's a jury only setup, no public vote. Four members, each juror basically stating their criteria on technical ability, quality of sound, their musicianship and interpretation, as well as communication is what the lead judge basically said. No public vote. It's just, what do the four jurors have to say?
I'll say this is a situation in which I believe in jury only. The public has no clue. I said this as someone who is time to invoke Stevie, boyfriend, fiance, who is a classical pianist. Time to invoke the fact that he runs this type of jury fairly regularly for his job, since he works at a proper little prestigious music school in the cities. And running a jury, it really is the sort of technical aspects to each discrete instrument that you have to take into account. And it's the sort of thing that as a lay person, you just don't appreciate or know or are able to judge. In this situation, I'd be so worried that everyone calling in to lodge their televote would just be like, oh, who played the best? The person who played the loudest and the fastest. Like, that's kind of how it always seems to distill for those or, not in the know.
You know, the little Belgian girl who's 13, she's like, oh, she's so young and so cute. You know, let's vote for that. Like, no, that's not how this does.
And so yeah, the little Belgian girl, the Mendelssohn that she played, Stevie regularly plays that. He practices that. That is a Mendelssohn piece that he often plays. Very popular.
Can I ask a question really quick?
Yes.
Just for clarification, and I didn't look this up, but it also would help just to say it out loud on the show. What is the allowed age range, and are there any restrictions on what kind of music they can pick?
12 to 21 is the age range. I'm not sure about the rules of like instrumentation. I can tell you that we've had we've had an interesting variety of instruments over the years that might inform that a little bit. We've had accordion, we've had harmonica, which is awesome.
Yeah, I need to go back and see. Mm-hmm.
We've had percussion. And by the way, one of the jurors, remember that happy drum guy from Vienna?
Yeah, it was him.
That was him.
Oh. Yeah, Martin Gruberger. Yeah.
I like happy drum guy. And it was cool to see him again. We've had bassoon, we've had saxophone, which is not traditionally a part of an orchestra, but there are saxophone concertos and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a cimbalom, which is like a dulcimer.
Oh, that's right. Wow.
10 years ago, we got guitar and recorder.
Hell yeah.
And every American middle schooler is like, wait, that's a thing?
not the way you learned it in school, but it is a thing. I mean, it's like a fife. Sort of a thing. We haven't had fife at Eurovision. Young musicians, not yet. And this year we got euphonium, which is awesome. I used to play euphonium for a number of years, and I did, yes. And it's a great instrument. I ended up switching to trombone because they're about the same in terms of timbre and things like that. And I am sure someone's going to be very upset that I just said that. But...
Oh, people switch instruments all the time.
Yeah, I mean, my friends
played trombone, so.
Yeah. The reason that Valerian, the euphonium player, said that he tried the euphonium, because he was originally a trumpet player, but he said he got braces, and just the embouchure, the mouth placement for trying to play the trumpet with braces was really uncomfortable.
Yeah, go lower.
Uncomfortable. I had braces and I had to put wax on my teeth in order to play French horn. I died.
So he ended up picking an instrument with a larger mouthpiece. So it was a little bit more comfortable. And now he plays both euphonium and trumpet. Also, I'm not sure if you caught this during the postcards where they were introducing.
I caught it.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
I did.
All yeah. the little postcards, which great on them for having postcards at Young Musicians. All of the artists were allowed to play a little snippet of just a song that they like. And euphonium guy Valerian played the code.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's actually really lovely.
That part.
Yeah. Like, oh. God, ooh, we like a self-aware.
Very cute.
Gotta say, I bet they're good friends.
Those postcards were fantastic because I liked that they got a chance to talk a little bit. So we got to know them at least somewhat. I feel like the adult Eurovision song postcards tend to be just like, here's some snippets of them just kind of screwing around and doesn't really tell you much about them.
Yeah. Mm. What we've learned about the acts this year is that they love to turn around in slow motion.
Yeah.
It's the benefit of every single artist only being a solo artist, and there's only 11 of them.
Yeah.
Well, oh, yeah.
But the fact that they could talk a little bit about like how they got into the instrument and what kind of why they picked the music that they chose, I thought that was all really fascinating.
It's so cool. No, I loved the postcards.
I decided to pick up the flute because it's a great way to meet chicks. I would love it if that was the entirety of it.
I was 6 years old and I was like, well, what has the most babe potential? In 10 years when I'm all horned up, literally.
So two things about the jury. First off, I'm glad about it. Big number one is, were they? I actually didn't like them talking.
No.
Yeah, I don't. It kind of gave me like The Voice vibes. And I guess it's a way to sort of add more variety to this telecast in particular. Maybe provide context for the folks watching who are, you know, potentially lay people. But like, I don't know. I didn't like it.
Hmm. You know the like the last couple of Irish national finals where the performance and then some stuffy people would be like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't. They do it in Vidbeer also, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't like it there and I don't like it in this. I don't know. It's a. And then like, and in those things, there's a televote that they can potentially be swaying by making these comments. And that at least that's not the case with this, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. Plus, they're kids.
Yeah.
Well, they never said anything negative, which I thought was interesting.
There'd be constructive criticism at one point. Yeah. It's like, oh, this, I wish you'd improved a little bit more, felt a little bit more organic. But it was all very constructive.
Yeah. It felt like a very positive environment all around. There were a couple of times, like I mentioned, where it felt like, oh, they didn't care for this. And they're trying to be nice. I thought they could have done a little bit better hiding that.
But I appreciated the fact that the four juries were coming from four different countries, and they all had backgrounds in different instruments as well. So there's a little bit more of a breadth and depth. There was a, like I said, a clarinetist from Sweden, a classical pianist from Armenia, the aforementioned Martin Grubinger, the Austrian percussionist, and then Tabitha Berglund, who's a conductor and cellist, who is Norwegian, even though she's actually now like the guest lead conductor over at the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. So
we poach them all, don't there. We?
I know we don't.
You belong to us now.
So I appreciated the fact that there was a nice like variety. It wasn't like you had just four piano players or, people from the same country. So that was nice. So the winner ends up, this is a nice little difference between the big show and this. With Eurovision, the winner, gets the trophy, but doesn't actually really receive anything other than potentially a bump in sales and streams and things like that.
Yeah.
But here, especially for a young musician and somebody just in the beginning stages of their careers and their educational tracks, they get a trophy, but they also receive PR and promotional support. They get a PR package for them. They get a featured slot at the Nordland Music Festival next year. Well, they'll be like a featured soloist. They get further you know, fellowships and scholarships. It's a big deal, I guess, for a budding musician, and especially those still in an educational track, I'd imagine. And it's a shame that Stevie's not here for me to bounce ideas off of. But like,
yeah,
what would this mean to a young musician who's, you know, maybe just about to graduate from their conservatory, like high school, which a lot of these kids are in? Like, what does that mean for them?
Well, it seems like a lot of them were at least somewhat established. Remember the one guy, he had like 27 awards already.
Yeah.
Which was really impressive. And then so some of them, it felt like they kind of have a foot in the door already, or have an established name and record, while others are kind of getting started. The 13-year-old girl, I would imagine, for as good as she was, she's, you know, still getting going.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So speaking of the winner, this year we saw that Leonard Baumgartner was the winner from Austria, the violin. Leon
Hard.
17 years old, playing Violin Concerto No. 5, not the Mambo, by Henri Vieuxtemps. This is Austria's sixth win, is solidifying their hold on the winningest country ever. Poland is in second place with 3 wins. Violin is also the winningest instrument. It's their 10th victory on a violin. And considering this competition is only every other year since 1982, that's a really big swath of victories there. Silver went to Hugo Svedberg, representing Sweden, playing the cello, 16 years old, playing a concerto by Haydn. Actually, he's from Bournemouth, UK, but his father is Swedish, so he, I guess, spent some time in both. And then a flautist from Germany, age 17, Fabian Egger, playing Tango Fantasia for flute and orchestra, with the bronze. So...
there's a part of me that intensely appreciates that we didn't pick any pianos for the...
I was about to say, yeah, there were 5 pianists, like almost half of the field were piano players, and none of them broke the top 3.
What a pain it must have been to take the piano on and off stage constantly.
Yeah, because the running order was such that you never had 2 piano players in a row.
It's wheeled. Yeah, you
need the, sawtooth, running order-wise.
I feel for a second, I thought, why don't they just have all the piano players go in a row and then they don't have to move the piano? And then it's like, you never want to hear piano again.
Yeah.
Surely there is no prejudice against playing the piano in the classical world, of course. But I feel like it this goes back to my thing about why the televote not having it is a good idea, is that I feel like it's easier to be sort of really, really hyper showy with the piano. The piano just can live on its own as its own instrument. It's capable of so many more voicings and so many harmonies than any of these, you know, wind instruments or string instruments are. So to sort of select a assemblage of instruments that are not the piano for the entire podium sort of is a testament to the jury's ability to gauge expressiveness for each discrete instrument and to be able to say, oh no, you achieved much more with just the violin or you achieved much more with just the cello or the flute than either of these other could. Mm. Testament to the sort of ability of the jury to suss that.
It's still kind of staggering to me that, I mean, I looked at all of these performances and thought, these are incredible, especially from people who've, you know, are a third my age. It was absolutely staggering to me. And just thinking, how can a judge look at that and say, this is good, this is bad? Like, these are kids and young people who've trained and have honed and perfected their skills in this. And I realize I'm so far out of my depth when it comes to this. It almost reminded me, and this is going to be, again, super nerdy and super dorky. It's like when you go to you watch a dog show like Westminster or Crufts or something like that, and you have the judge who's judging best in show, and you're trying to compare each dog to its breed standard, but you have to remember what each one of those breed standards is for one of the 100 and some odd different breeds that could be in front of you. Like, how do you keep that all in mind instead of just saying, oh, they're all good boys and good girls.
I like watching dog shows, but having to decide which dog, like dog is best the best dog. is crazy.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't.
It's like they're all good doggos.
Yeah. And with this, actually, one of the notes I wrote down was how during the postcard of the very first act, so the Norwegian piano player, possibly the piano performance I enjoyed the most as well. He said something right at the start that just cut into my soul, which was, it's weird to have a contest for music.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
It's like, it's just so subjective. Like, if we had four different jurors, would Leonhard still won? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. If it was us, I don't know that he would have.
Yeah. I thought he was really good.
For instance, yeah. Yeah, it was brilliant. But one of the things with piano performance for me was that, and I have this issue with very virtuosic, like electric guitar players as well, where it seems like at some point the and this is kind of a thing about the composers as much as anything, where it seems like it stops being about making something that is evocative and beautiful to listen to, and more about how many notes can we hit and how quickly can we hit them. Like, I know Joe Satriani is a profoundly good technical guitar player. I also think his music isn't very good because because it's just like as
yeah, I have the same opinion when the Oscars happen every year, which is that too often the award doesn't go to the best acting; it goes to the most acting.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
If you can get that vibe, like there are actors out there every day who turn in performances where you don't pay attention to them, but you believe their characters still the same. There are characters in every single show that you watch and every single movie that you watch that you are not actively seeing as a celebrity or as an actor, but as a character. And those people are doing just as much work as Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. Like those people really are. So it's like when you see someone who is, say, playing the euphonium, I'm just going to take Mr. Euphonium, who I love. And hearing the way that he can express notes without, you know, mashing the valves 10 times every second, like that, like bringing music to life in the exact way that the composer wanted it to, that is the goal of being a musician, not necessarily showing off. Not to be mean to these children, although being mean to children on this podcast is my bread and butter. But like the like depth of expression is always superior to technical mastery. I'm just going to say it. Like if you can, if you can bend technique to evoke a work of art best, that's what we're looking at. And I think that is what the jury rewarded most.
It's interesting you say that because I think the Austrian guy winning, I felt he had kind of a showy performance. And
yes.
I feel like in a way they were sort of rewarding that, but the fact that like I thought
so did Alexander Rybak, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking of when I was watching. I'm like, oh, he's got stage presence like crazy.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
At the same time, when the Czech guy came on, he was just hammering away at the piano.
Yeah,
I was like, shocked at how quick he was going. Like he was not letting up the entire thing. And I was like, oh, that's really
same thing
cool.
With the Serbian guy. Yeah.
Oh, the one playing Rachmaninoff?
Also, I thought he looked him. Like, you know, he's from Serbia, so maybe that was affecting it. But I thought he just looked like, you know, what if we put Novak Djokovic in a Noel Coward costume? Like, I really loved what I was seeing there. It was fantastic.
Not enough good costume choices on this show.
Yeah, who's getting the Barbara Dex?
Costume changes, not enough pyro. Not enough pyro here. Bye.
Oh my god. Can you imagine?
Well, didn't somebody actually say
glitter at the end?
Yeah, I was about to say, didn't Gruberger, the percussionist, say something to the effect of, I was waiting for smoke to come out of the piano or something like that during his comments? I'm like, yes, that is I mean, considering that he was at Eurovision for the Make Makes, that hits home.
Yeah. Well,
it's interesting too, I think, in terms of like sorry, like showing a range. I thought the euphonium player really showed a lot of range in his choice of music. Like it started off really slow and it was really kind of just calming. And I remember, and then it like, I'm like, this guy needs to pick this up if he wants to like get any attention. And then he does. And it suddenly he's like flipping away at those keys and just kind of going. And I'm just like, okay, wow, we're seeing a lot of different style here.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought like really sort of showcased his talent and his range. Whereas other people are like, I'm going to kind of do this kind of music. And just that's the music piece I'm doing. And which was fine, but it seemed like that got rewarded.
I mean, I'm almost wondering with the euphonium, and I feel like are we basically agreeing that like he is our winner? Like the fact that we keep talking about the euphonium.
He was my favorite.
Yeah,
he was my
for
favorite.
Sure for yeah. For exactly the reasons that Derek said. Yeah. That it, I think the first two performances from this are a really neat contrast of sort of the things we're talking about in terms of like, well, this guy, this is just sort of.
Are we gonna give our win to the guy in the death slot?
Darn right we are.
Are we gonna do it for once?
But there was so much subtlety, and there was especially at the slower beginning part of that piece. What a brilliant composition, by the way, the euphonium piece.
That was the modern piece. That was the one that was that was composed in 2017.
Yeah, it just the way he played that with such feeling, and I'm not saying the other players didn't. A couple of the piano things felt a bit robotic, but there was just something else about that performance. You could feel the intonality on some of like the slower things where he was just playing his heart out, and then by the end it's virtuosic as well. But the beginning parts of that euphonium piece were like maybe the least technical of anything we heard, but it was maybe my favorite part of any performance as well, because it just felt, to put it in like Eurovision terms, authentic. And I loved him. I thought he was great. I don't know. We didn't talk about like doing a countdown or anything like that. But I liked him. I liked the cellist.
A
lot. He ended up second.
Yes.
I also just really love cello. And that's the thing is some of these, it's like, well, this is the French kid. It just made me realize, I think it was well done. I think it just also made me realize I don't like Ravel.
That's fair.
So there's that as well when factoring in, you know, the style of the era of music. You know, how do you compare these different eras as well?
Yeah, I mean,
that's a tricky thing. I also quite liked. What else did I like?
I liked the Polish clarinet.
That was good. I thought that Rachmaninoff. Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini from Serbia was really cool. That's probably my top three: Switzerland, Sweden, Serbia.
Very
cool. Those S's.
Yes, I only like S countries, which is why I had fun at this year's Eurovision and will have fun at next year's Eurovision, but not at any others.
Come on, Spain, get it.
Yeah, Spain. Ooh, yeah, Junior this year is going to be good too, then.
Yeah.
But only because France isn't spelled France.
It's France.
Yeah.
It's France!
Do you mean Brands?
Oh, right. Right.
I do think it's interesting to look at this and see the instruments that were unique. I know there wasn't a lot of love for Armenia. I kind of feel like if we had the full ranking, he might have been near the bottom.
Perhaps, yeah.
And the feedback he got from the jurors was like, yeah, that you were there. You played the music. But
yeah, it wasn't quite as glowing, certainly.
It was clearly not glowing. But I rather liked the oboe, and I thought he played very well.
I was going to say that in terms of instruments that have the biggest breadth of ability to express, the double reeds don't, like, that's just kind of not what they do. Like, they're there for the uniqueness of timbre. And for the speed with which you can click through those keys. And so if that's what was played and in a very good way, like, it's tough. Even more so than in regular Eurovision, it is tough to compare. Once you get to a certain level where everyone is playing their individual instrument really well.
It's like the dog show thing I was saying before. When you have the best German Shepherd next to the best Corgi, next to the best, pug.
It's dog like, pool.
Yes. Dog pool. Yes.
Dog in the world.
Yeah. Oh. But how do you decide when, you know, I mean, it's obviously I'm not the one sitting in that jury seat, and thank God, because that would be really very bad.
I mean, the reason they get professional musicians to do these is because they recognize the pieces that they're choosing. And they can sort of see the level of talent that it would take. I mean, I think they are taking into consideration the challenge they've taken on and their ability to perform that successfully. And like some of the other things I thought were kind of interesting, their stage presence and their ability to kind of show their charismatic side and engage with the audience. And I think it was really interesting, the Norwegian guy, they said, you were kind of like fighting the orchestra at first. And then at the end of it, he kind of was friends with them, I think that's what they said.
Hmm.
Like it was sort of like this competition, and that sort of created a really unique narrative through the performance. And I thought that was really interesting to point out. Like, I didn't catch that at all. I just thought that, okay. It is interesting to note they're probably really looking for their ability to stand apart from the backing orchestra in the same way that at Eurovision, you want a singer who's going to stand apart from the backing vocalists. And it's so obvious when they're leaning on the backing vocalists to do all the heavy lifting.
Which is interesting considering the criticism that they gave to the French piano player was something along the lines of the piece that you selected is often seen as like a chamber music piece. And you definitely stood out, but we wanted more of the chamber music to come out. So it's not just how do you stand against the rest of your ensemble, but how do you complement it as well? It's a really, really hard line to toe, I'm sure.
It's interesting too, that they just had the one orchestra and there wasn't really a lot of opportunity. Cause I remember thinking, God, this would be great with a jazz band behind them rather than an orchestra. And to see what kind of sound they could come up with there. And I know that'd be like, really, really hard to have an entire second backing group coming in and out. But at the same time, it's like, it feels very constrained in terms of like that kind of creativity.
Right. And we've had instruments that have appeared in the past. Like we were talking about the cymbalom before. There's an Armenian kanun. There's a tamburica from Croatia that appeared in 2016. If there's an instrument that really is most highlighted in a traditional folkloric piece, if you're working with, say, the Norwegian radio orchestra like we had in Bodø, and they've never played a traditional Belarusian folk song that would highlight the use of the cymbalom, the kid might be an absolute ace at playing the cymbalom, but if they're not meshing with the orchestra, if they've never really worked with this style of music before, is that a disadvantage to them?
Imagine if every Eurovision performance had the same backing vocalists.
Oh my God.
Like here's 12 people. They're going to perform on every song.
Yeah. Wow. I noticed that there is a BBC Young Musician event. And part of the reason that the UK didn't participate this year is that they're having theirs around this same time. I'm not sure if it's happened yet as of the time of recording. But that contest does have a jazz category.
Oh.
So there's classical and then there's jazz. There might even be more than that. But yeah, I would be intrigued to see if like a jazz bassist were to compete in this, or someone who really likes Herbie Hancock, an electric piano player or something like that. Could we accommodate that? Or is this kind of going back to what Derek was wondering about, what are you allowed to do in a contest like this? Could they accommodate that? The winner in 2016 was a saxophonist. And I was curious if that was jazzy at all. It's not. It's a rhapsody for saxophone by somebody. Andre Vaginen.
Vaginen. Belgian.
Yeah. So that'd be cool. Eurovision jazz contest.
Ooh. It's like there used to be more of these sort of satellite competitions. I mean, at this point, we just have, you know, Eurovision Song Contest, Junior Eurovision, and now Eurovision Young Musicians. There used to be a Eurovision Young Dancers competition. So Young Musicians happens basically every even year. It used to be paired with Eurovision Young Dancers in the odd years, but that was canceled after 2017. Kind of miss it.
Is Eurovision Choir still going on?
No, I think that was just a once or twice. I haven't heard anything else about that happening again, which is a shame because that was another really, really fun competition that that just, again, scratched a very different itch. There were only two iterations of that one in 2017 and 2019, including, you know, there was a Welsh participation as well as Scotland participating as an independent nation instead of, you know, a United Kingdom. Yeah. So very, very cool contest there. Unfortunately, as of right now, defunct. There was also the Eurovision Dance Contest, which was different from Eurovision Young Dancers, which is almost like a Dancing with the Stars sort of a thing.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Everyone sees how well they dance alongside Chanel.
Oh,
I'd watch that.
It'd be like the opposite of that thing where people are saying at the Olympics have one normal person dancing or a normal person doing the events alongside all the athletes just for context.
So Australia.
Yeah. Oh,
I see. I see Derek's joining the discourse.
Who's the second best Australian breakdancer?
Yeah.
You do you, Ray Gun. You do you.
Yeah. Yeah. I love seeing somebody said something like Olympics podcast, by the way, that to rank the Olympic events by how fast I would die.
Ooh. Okay. So surfing's at the top.
Are we specifically just talking Summer Olympics or winter as well?
Ooh, I mean, with winter,
would kill you faster? Yeah, powerlifting or ski jump?
Ski jump is like instant death, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Ski jumping, yeah. I mean, any downhill skiing.
Slalom.
I mean, the thing with like powerlifting is you would just fail to lift anything. You wouldn't die. You just would.
Unless you like broke yourself in half. Yeah.
Bad. Yeah.
Oh, skeleton. Surely, the aptly named.
Ooh. Oh man.
Yeah.
Winter Olympics wins this.
Winter Olympics much more dangerous.
Handily, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. The old ski and shoot battle of the biathlon.
Yeah, what would kill me faster? Maybe it's the gun.
Okay, so we've established that Eurovision Young Musicians is cool and good. What other Eurovisions do you think we should have?
Ooh. I mean, I would love for them to revive Eurovision Young Dancers. I thought that was fantastic. It was accessible. There has been a little bit of a crossover between Young Dancers and the big show. I believe a Polish winner of Young Dancers ended up hosting Junior Eurovision a couple of times. So there was certainly that. And it was just fun, you know, people doing, you know, contemporary or one of the many, many different styles. So I'd love to see that be revived.
Some sort of instrumental ensemble thing, basically Eurovision, but you don't have to have a vocalist. So yeah, maybe jazz or just like a imagine like a mix of like jazz groups and then like a prog trio like Rush doing, you know, a YYZ sort of a thing, and ooh. And like, I would be intrigued to see a contest where vocals, like the music is contemporary, but vocals are not required.
I mean, if we're opening it up, I'd love to see you in MMA. I mean, there's a few countries in Europe that take that stuff very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, could the Caucasus lose?
It depends.
Well,
Brits might do all right.
Yeah. What about a Eurovision cooking competition? You know, like a
great Eurovision Bake Off.
Yes.
Ooh. No. Definitely Hell's Kitchen format instead. No. Ooh. I told you. I need more wars. I need
more. Who you say that to, man?
It's more like Iron Chef, where they have like a secret ingredient they don't know about.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Eurovision Iron Chef. I love it.
Even though I feel like there's some cuisines that are naturally a little bit more.
You know what is just like an athletic competition where each country has its own representatives. And then maybe at the start, we'll hold it in some place everybody likes, like Paris. And we'll parade everyone down the poopy river. To start it out.
Formerly poopy river.
It's definitely still.
It's still
poopy. Half poopy.
Didn't they all get listeria or something? Like it.
Listeria.
Forever to the end of the Olympics. Yeah.
And then to tie it into Eurovision,
Celine Dion.
We find a big tower and stick Celine Dion in there so she can't get down. And then she'll sing some song about how cool France is or whatever.
I'm sold.
I think it could work.
I think so. Yeah. Well, you at home, what other Eurovision competitions would you like to see? What did you folks think of Eurovision Young Musicians? What would you like to see? Like, how would you like to see this being more Eurovision or less Eurovision-y? I don't know. Again, you can know how to reach us. 12 points USA on all the standard social medias. 12pointsforamerica@gmail.com if you want to email us directly. Yeah. I think by the next time that we all congregate, we may have a host city.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. And let us know what other weird things that are kind of like Eurovision you want us to watch and talk about. Because, like, I will watch any number of these things.
Oh, actually, I had a tidbit kind of related to that, though.
Ooh.
You know how I mentioned that the event this year was held in Bodø, Norway?
Uh-huh.
That's way up there. It's not, like, as far north as Tromsø.
Yeah.
But it is north of the Arctic Circle. If you're looking at the globe, it's north of Nome, Alaska. And it is north of the 2024 Pan-Arctic Vision host city, Nuuk, Greenland.
It's farther north than Nuuk?
It's farther north than Nuuk.
Whoa.
Yeah. And if you are following the Pan-Arctic Vision social media outlet, which I highly recommend you do, they are just beginning to announce the representatives for the 2024 event, which I am sure we will cover as we get to that. I believe that's going to be this October.
It's in October.
Nuuk, yeah. In Greenland.
1,000% we are doing an intervision.
There
is going to be an intervision this year, apparently.
In theory.
I was reading about that and was confused. I don't know that we'll cover that, but we will definitely cover Pan-Arctic Vision. And if there's a vision in your area that we should be talking about, let us know. We like visions.
I miss Turk Vision. Can we get that back?
We should get Turk Vision back. No,
Turkey back in Eurovision.
I was gonna say, if you give them Eurovision again, then they're just gonna keep doing it. They're just gonna keep staying away, and I can't keep them away. They gotta come back.
¿Por qué no los dos?
Hey.
Anyway, on that note, everybody, we will catch you on our next episode. But until then, I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
I've been Eric.
And I've been Danny.
And America.
Stop listening now. Derek, that was a good fart. That's so crazy. It's so crazy you were able to do that right up to the microphone.
Yeah.